Welcome to International Edition. This is Friday, the 24th of July, 2015. I'm Ira Melbourne in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. president starts a journey to Africa. Another mass murderer at the U.S. movie theater. The shooter has been identified. An announcement of a new vaccine for malaria.
This is a very, very important day. Malaria kills about 500,000 children every year in sub-Saharan Africa. That makes it one child every minute.
And we explore a slew of new discoveries in outer space. All that and more coming up on VOA's International Edition. President Barack Obama arrives in Kenya Friday evening amid extremely tight security for the start of a landmark two-day visit. Security forces have been patrolling the capital, which has been put on a virtual lockdown ahead of President Obama's first visit to the country as president. Joining us from Nairobi is VOA White House correspondent Aru Pandey. Aru, Kenya has special significance for the U.S. president. Can you explain that just a bit?
Well, obviously, his father is Kenyan-born, and although he didn't have much of a relationship with his father during his childhood, he did come to Kenya before he was senator, and as senator as well, and he visited with his relatives here. He does have some extended family here in a village in Kenya. So he talked in depth about his ties to his homeland in his first book. So this is definitely a big deal for Kenyans, not just because, you know, he's returning to Kenya, but he's returning to Kenya as U.S. president, which is huge for people here.
Now, one would imagine security has been beefed up. What have you seen so far? What's evident? Anything out of the norm that you can see?
Well, I tell you what, I mean, having not been to Nairobi before, I don't know what's normal, but talking to the people on the street, seeing streets completely clear, it almost looks deserted during the daytime. Many of the shops were completely closed, and everyone was telling me wherever I walked that this is not normal. Normally, the streets would be packed with traffic. There'd be people out and about, but really, you don't see too many people out. You see security forces are there. I did see some people this afternoon lined up in anticipation of when President Obama arrives, and he has just touched down in Nairobi as we speak. Air Force One has just landed. So the excitement is definitely in the air, but on the streets it's pretty quiet because a lot of it has been cleared because of the security concerns.
All right, what are the key elements of this trip? How long is it going to take, and where is he going to go?
Well, there's a couple key elements. First of all, he's going to be talking about trade and security. Those are going to be the two big issues he speaks to Kenya's president about tomorrow. He'll be speaking at the Global Entrepreneurship Summit as well, talking about boosting U.S. investment in Africa, which is huge. And then also he will be going from here to Ethiopia, where he'll meet with the prime minister. That will be the first visit to Ethiopia by an American president. So that will also be a big deal, but it's also been a controversial visit because a lot of analysts and human rights activists say that it sends the wrong message because of what they say is a repressive regime in Ethiopia.
Aru Pandey is VOA's White House correspondent talking with us from Nairobi, Kenya. Aru, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
There are other things happening, and another mass shooting in the United States to tell you about. Police in the U.S. state of Louisiana have now identified the gunman who opened fire Thursday evening at a movie theater, killing two people and wounding seven others before he killed himself. Officials in the town of Lafayette say they're seeking more information about the suspect, who they have identified as 59-year-old John Russell Hauser. The Lafayette police chief, Jim Kraft, described him as kind of a drifter. About 100 people were in the theater watching the film Trainwreck when the gunman began shooting his fellow moviegoers with a handgun. The police chief said it was apparent that he was intent on shooting and escaping. Quick response forced him back into the theater, said the police chief, at which time he killed himself. No word as yet on a possible motive. So again, another mass shooting at a movie theater. It has happened before in the United States. Well, for world reaction to things that are going on around the world, we turn to our social media correspondent, Andrew Palczewski. What are you seeing so far?
Well, the two stories that you talked about, President Obama's trip to Africa and this shooting, are two that are trending. We see a lot of people on Voice of America's Facebook page wishing President Obama the best, saying we're so glad he's coming to Africa, saying it's about time that he's come to Kenya since it's his ancestral home. With regard to this mass shooting, I mentioned earlier this morning that Amy Schumer, the star of the movie Trainwreck, had tweeted out her condolences for the shooting. It's now been retweeted over 12,000 times. And other reactions coming in about that as well, reactions to the shooter, reactions to how could this happen again. As you mentioned, 3 years ago we had a shooting. Actually, it was July of 2012 during The Dark Knight Rises, the Batman film in Colorado that left 12 people dead. So people saying, how can it happen again in this safe space where it's supposed to be a place of fun and entertainment? Moving on from that, we have a story out of Capitol Hill. We had talked about this a couple weeks ago, that there was a Senate panel that wanted social media companies, Twitter, Facebook, Google, to monitor social media for extremist threats and posts.
They didn't want to do it, right?
And they didn't want to do it. And that's exactly what they're telling the panel today, is they're striking back, saying this really, we don't want to set ourselves up to get in trouble with this. They said that they already ban a lot of the content that the government wants them to monitor, videos, beheadings, any kind of violent, objectionable content. But they don't want to agree to any of these things, because what happens if they miss something, is their argument. If we miss a post and something happens, are we legally responsible then? So that's a story that's been trending on social media. We've covered it on voanews.com, and it's one that's certainly not going to go away, because as ISIS continues to use social media to push out these messages, they look at how they're countering them and how they're facing them.
Earlier, we talked about some trending material dealing with the discovery of a planet far, far away. That's still trending?
It is. People still making jokes about that. It's Kepler 452b, Earth 2.0 is what people are calling it. So that was another trending term today, Earth 2.0, cousin of Earth. And actually, the breaking trending news this afternoon is Hulk Hogan, the wrestling star, actor, celebrity. Video or an audio tape was released of him using some racist remarks. So he's been a trending topic. Also very interesting, WWE, the wrestling behemoth, has kind of erased him from their website. They've removed all of his merchandise. They've removed any mention of him. So it's very interesting, people commenting on that, how quickly his image has kind of been scrubbed from their site after so many years of him being one of their marquee stars.
Thanks, Andrew. Greatly appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We welcome your questions, your comments. Send us a tweet at @VOA_IE. You can also log onto our website at voanews.com and post your reactions there. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Drug maker GlaxoSmithKline has announced that it has a new vaccine against malaria, which affects many developing countries, especially some in sub-Saharan Africa. International Edition's Jeffrey Young is with me, and he has spoken with the drug company's head of vaccines. Thanks for being with us, Jeff.
Ira, Dr. Monsif Flawi stressed the importance of developing this malaria vaccine, Mosquirix, which, if fully approved for use, would be the first one to address this deadly disease. Dr. Flawi, could this be the breakthrough that turns the tide against this disease?
This is a very, very important day. Malaria kills about 500,000 children every year in sub-Saharan Africa. That makes it one child every minute. This vaccine has the potential to prevent about a third to a half of these deaths every year. It's going to be transformational for people living in sub-Saharan Africa, the parents of these children and the children themselves, of course.
What is malaria? What spreads the disease? And why are children so vulnerable?
Malaria is caused by a parasite. This parasite is transmitted through mosquito bites. A particular mosquito very specific to Africa carries this particular parasite. The parasites infect everybody that's bitten by the mosquito, whether they're adults or children. Children are particularly susceptible because they have a developing immune system to help protect them against the parasite. As they become older, they get sick, but with less severity and less death.
People from areas where malaria is not prevalent, where it's not common, are highly susceptible to it. So there must be a certain level of built-up immunity in some areas. Is that true?
That's exactly what happens. A way to say it is, if you are lucky and you survive the early episodes of malaria that you get when you are an infant, then over time, every time you're bitten, you get sick, but you develop some level of immunity against the parasite. By the time you're an adolescent or an adult, if you have survived to that stage, you are mildly sick.
The World Health Organization also said that in 2013, malaria killed an estimated 584,000 people, but it also said that mortality rates among African children have declined by 58% since the year 2000. Tell me what was done to accomplish this significant reduction.
One of the most important interventions against malaria over the past 10, 15 years has been the introduction of bed nets that help protect the children from mosquitoes and therefore decrease the rate of transmission of malaria. We believe that the vaccine that we have approved today will be an addition to these bed nets and should hopefully decrease the rate of malaria by an equivalent amount.
And finally, what steps must be taken at this point to get this vaccine totally approved and out of the market for widespread use in Africa and other regions?
Now that the European Medicine Agency has approved it, it's the turn of the World Health Organization to pre-qualify it and define how best to use it. That recommendation is something that should take place somewhere by the end of the year 2015.
Dr. Monsif Ploui is the chairman of vaccines at drug maker GlaxoSmithKline, discussing the company's new anti-malaria vaccine, Mosquirix.
Well, there's a lot of hope this works, Jeff. Thanks for being with us.
A lot of lives depend on this, Ira.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. We talked about this with Andrew Palcheski, trending on social media. U.S. scientists are celebrating the discovery of a planet with striking similarities to Earth. John Jenkins, who's a spokesman for NASA, the American Space Agency, says the planet was spotted orbiting a distant sun-like star some 1,400 light-years away.
It would likely have a mass about five times that of Earth and a surface gravity about twice that of Earth. So you and I would weigh twice as much as we do now, but only until we walked around for a few weeks and lost some serious pounds. We'd also expect the atmosphere to be thicker and have more cloud cover, and this planet would likely still have very active volcanoes.
Now, this latest discovery is the latest in a series of revelations from the space agency. NASA's New Horizons spacecraft made its close flyby of Pluto on July 14th when the probe came within 7,800 miles or 12,500 kilometers of the dwarf planet's surface, and that followed NASA's Dawn mission. Joining us on International Edition is Dr. Mark Raymond. He is the mission director for the Dawn program from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and the chief engineer of the project. And, Mark, thanks for being with us so much.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for your interest.
Your little craft is about to do something else, get closer to the asteroids that it's been circling?
Well, in fact, the Dawn spacecraft is orbiting a dwarf planet, just as Pluto is a dwarf planet. And so most people remember, of course, in 2006 when Pluto was recategorized as a dwarf planet, And of course, there was all sorts of unhappiness. How could Earth be such an interplanetary bully? And why didn't we consider Pluto's feelings in the matter? But whatever you think of that decision, Ceres, which Dawn is orbiting, is in the same category. Ceres was the first dwarf planet humankind discovered, and Dawn is orbiting it now and conducting an in-depth exploration.
Well, most of us have seen pictures of Ceres and seen those really strange white dots, looks like city lights glowing through something, and also what seems to be a pyramid. This reminds us all of our Saturday morning matinees that those who are old enough remember go seeing. What have you found so far, and what are you looking to find?
Well, you're right. We found some amazing things. One of them is these bright spots. There are several of them, and it's impossible not to be mesmerized by them. I mean, they just look like glowing beacons shining out from these unfamiliar lands ahead, and we're trying to figure out what they are, but we don't know. And the structure you referred to, some people call it a pyramid, it's actually a cone, looks to me like a volcano. And so it's fabulous exploring an alien, uncharted world.
What were the hopes as opposed and contrasted with the realization so far of what you found?
Well, what we want to find is the nature of this world, and so our hope is only to learn what makes this huge object, the largest object between Mars and Jupiter, what makes it tick? What is a world of rock and ice in this part of the solar system like? And so it's not that we want it to be any one way or another way. We simply want to find out what the nature of this mysterious place is. And so it's very gratifying that we are. We're seeing sights we've never seen before. And one of the things we hope to find out is whether or not there's a subsurface ocean of liquid water.
Now, that would be fascinating. Are there any expectations towards something like that at all?
There are indications that certainly Ceres has a large amount of ice, and whether or not any of it is in liquid form deep under the surface, we don't know, but it's one of the things that we want to investigate. We know that there is water there. The question is, what form is it in?
Tell us the timetable for Dawn to come to a closer orbit around Ceres and what you hope to expect from that, or what you expect to hope for from that.
Well, we started out in our first orbit in May at 8,400 miles, and then we maneuvered in orbit down to get to 2,700 miles in June. Right now, the spacecraft is maneuvering again, aiming for an orbit of about 900 miles, which we will reach in August. We'll spend a couple of months there taking more detailed measurements, and then by the end of the year, the spacecraft will be down at an orbit of about 230 miles, which is even a little bit closer to Ceres than the International Space Station is to Earth. And so one of the beauties of being able to orbit a dwarf planet instead of just a quick flyby is we can linger and make a detailed, in-depth, close-up exploration. And so that's what we're going to be doing.
Dr. Mark Raymond is the chief engineer and mission director for the Dawn Project at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. Mark, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Science fiction quickly becoming fiction in today's world. Moving on now to music. An online spat between pop superstars Taylor Swift and Nicki Minaj has come to an end. The high-profile conflict even involved other pop stars, including Katy Perry and Rihanna. David Byrd spoke with VOA's top five countdown host Ray McDonald about what happened, why it happened, and how it's come to an end.
She is considered one of the queens of pop music, but Taylor Swift was getting kind of in a bit of a tiff this week with Nicki Minaj. It all started over the Video Music Award nominations that came out earlier. Ray, what exactly, how did all of this start? How did this Twitter war start?
It all started humbly enough on July 21st when Nicki Minaj said, hey, where's my Video of the Year nomination for Anaconda? and she felt that she'd been passed over, and she made a comment that the media seemed to have double standards when it comes to females, that African Americans were held to a different standard. They were shunted aside, put on an urban award shows, and that why wasn't she in the center stage when white performers doing the same things got all the recognition. She didn't name any names.
My anaconda don't, my anaconda don't, my anaconda don't want none unless you got buns, hun.
Boy, Toy named Troy used to live in Detroit. Big, 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 big money, he was getting some coins. Was in shootouts with the Lord, but he lived in a palace. Bought me Alexander McQueen, he was keeping me stylish.
Now, well, she did mention something about if you're a tall, thin, skinny woman in your video, then, you know, you'll get attention. Now that's,
well, that caught Taylor's attention.
That's kind of a, what do they call that? It's not a direct tweet at somebody, but it's kind of an implied tweet. Because Taylor Swift and most all, well, all of the women in her Bad Blood video, which was nominated, are tall and thin and, you know, runway model types. And then, now, see, I don't get what Nikki's talking about with the urban thing, though, because Beyonce was one of the other nominees.
Well, so, of course. I mean, you can pick her claims apart. And this was, I think, an emotional response. And I think you can say that certain elements of her argument have merit, and others, maybe not so much.
Well, now, see, what also goes on here is other pop stars, Katy Perry and Rihanna, weighed in or started to weigh in on this thing. It went on for a few days. And then finally, Taylor Swift called a truce. She basically said, look, I misunderstood and my bad. So sorry. Love you. You know, air kisses.
She and Nicki Minaj made up. Taylor said, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. I spoke rashly and I apologize. And Nicki said, thank you, Taylor. That means so much. My respect for you has gone up. And like you say, a peace seems to have been restored.
All right, that's VOA's Ray McDonald. You can hit him up at VOA underscore music. You can send me a tweet. I'm David underscore D Bird. That's with a Y, not an I. And you can also send your messages to VOA underscore IE. If you love
like that, love. Thanks for joining us on International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have yourself a good weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On a recent visit to Ukraine, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs Victoria Nuland highlighted the Ukrainian people's commitment to the pursuit of a modern, democratic European state. Commending the Rada's historic votes to send constitutional amendments on decentralization to the Constitutional Court and to approve a package of reform measures required to unlock the next tranche of IMF funding, Assistant Secretary Nuland said the measures were steps that will break the old oligarchic system that operated in Ukraine and put Ukraine on the path to true democratic, open market governance, clean economy, market standards, European standards. She also noted the amendments fulfill Ukraine's obligations under the Minsk ceasefire agreements and will bring to Ukraine's constitution European standards of decentralized power, including the opportunity for all the regions of Ukraine to control their own future, to have more power in budgeting, to take the kind of responsibility for improving quality of life at the local level and the quality of democracy at the local level, and to bring growth to the local economy. A key factor in Ukraine's economic development will be confronting corruption in all its forms. Recent anti-corruption legislation allows for personnel changes in order to create a more transparent law enforcement system. Equally important is a functioning justice system. It's not just a matter of presenting cases to the prosecutor, said Assistant Secretary Nuland. The prosecutor has to complete some cases so that the people of Ukraine have confidence that if they report a crime, those people are going to pay, that there will be justice. Assistant Secretary Nuland urged unity among Ukrainians in implementing reforms. We want to see that United Front work as quickly as possible on these very difficult economic and rule of law reforms. With regard to the September 2014 Minsk ceasefire agreements and the February 12th Minsk implementation plan, Assistant Secretary Nuland said, we've made absolutely clear that we expect Minsk to be implemented. As you know, the sanctions that the U.S. and the EU have in place are there to change the policy of Russia, to encourage it to fulfill its obligations. We've made clear that they will stay in place until Minsk is fully implemented, including an end to the violence, including a return of hostages, a return of the border. But we've also made clear that if the violence increases, we're prepared to put more pressure on Russia.
That was an editorial.